Conservative? You bet. Controversial? Right again. It's time to squabble on the Jim Benson Show.
Hello, and welcome to another edition of the Jim Benson Show. Conservative talk radio covering the issues that concern you here on the BBS Radio Network. Many people in America today, on both sides of the political spectrum, know something very wrong is happening in our country. And many are beginning to speak out about what we are seeing, which is, essentially, the political left moving rapidly to orchestrate a totalitarian takeover of America. I know that sounds extreme, even unbelievable, but the signs are all around us. After the 2020 election coup, in which we are being told we should believe that sleepy, creepy Joe Biden, whose family members raked in millions in lucrative government and private sector business deals while Biden was vice president, and who have received millions from entities associated with the Communist Chinese Party, the CCP, won the presidential election in a massive landslide. We're supposed to believe that Beijing Biden, as he is called, is the most popular president by far ever, garnering some 15 million more votes than even former President Barack Obama when he was reelected in 2012. From the day he was sworn in as the 46th president, Biden, who is clearly frail and struggling mentally, has been busy promoting a total reversal of all of the America First policies of President Donald Trump, including a reversal of Trump's policies toward communist China, and throwing open our borders, encouraging massive illegal alien immigration that is sure to destabilize the entire nation. But these policies, I would argue, are exactly what is wanted by the CCP and its globalist oligarch allies, such as the radically left-wing billionaire George Soros, who sees America as we have known it as a hindrance and obstacle to his vision of the vaunted new world order, world government that he has declared communist China must lead. With the U.S. Democratic Party all but completely under his thumb, along with the mainstream media and many members of the Washington bureaucracy, the so-called deep state, as well as members of state and local governments, particularly secretaries of state who run our elections and district attorneys who refuse to prosecute communist anarchists rioting and destroying our cities, Soros is the face of the new world order in America. It's been particularly disturbing for many of us to see high officials of the federal government, like the charlatan former U.S. Attorney General Bill Barr, claim his corrupt Justice Department could find no evidence of significant election fraud. And FBI Director Chris Wray testified before Congress that his agency has uncovered no evidence that the communist anarchist group Antifa was involved in the disturbance at the Capitol January 6th, or that anyone from this group posed as a Trump supporter. Those of us watching alternative media saw mountains of election fraud evidence, including statements by just a few of the thousand or so election workers who provided sworn affidavits about what they saw and experienced. We saw the many videos of the bizarre protesters at the Capitol on the 6th of January along with Trump supporters. There were some Trump supporters there, no doubt about it, including the now famous John Sullivan, a well-known Antifa and Marxist Black Lives Matter activist there, participating in the Capitol disturbance dressed in pro-Trump garb and declaring that the Capitol should be destroyed. It's been shocking and, frankly, for me, very depressing to see that these high government officials have abrogated their oath of office and work only to advance the far-left ideology and policies of the Democratic Party and, by proxy, the Communist parties, both here in the USA and mainland China. But that's what we are faced with today. The same can be said of our once revered Supreme Court. While it's my opinion that Justices Clarence Thomas and Samuel Alito are real justices and want to perform their duties in accordance with the Constitution, the rest of these justices clearly serve the interests of the deep state, the Democratic Party, and the alliance of communists and oligarchs seeking the utter destruction of America. And of course, this includes the three Trump-appointed justices, Barrett, Kavanaugh, and Gorsuch, who stood with the four other anti-Trump and left-wing justices in refusing to even consider important cases involving election fraud and denial of basic constitutional rights. It was obvious that after the election, the corrupt establishment was more or less involved in, and if nothing else, surely supporting, the coup to overthrow Trump's reelection. It was decided Trump had to go, and these seven justices bowed before their masters to make sure the coup was successfully carried out. We can expect more of the same in the future. I was reading the Chinese Communist view of the January 6th Capitol riot by a CCP commentator who was gloating and declaring that the Capitol disturbance signaled, quote, the end of America, close quote, which the commentator also declared was, quote, well-deserved, close quote. If you've been following the controversy over the election fraud evidence and allegations, you are well aware that the numerous allegations – you're well aware of the numerous allegations of Communist China's involvement, including unspecified activities alleged by Trump's former director of national intelligence, Rick Grenell. So now that they have actually pulled off the coup and Biden has been installed as president, they are moving rapidly to make this a complete takeover of America and once and for all subjugate the nation to their will, turning us into another country of peasants who exist to serve the interests of these world government promoting elites. I believe that Biden, this frail old fool who sold his soul to the communists and their allies, the globalist oligarchs, in return for the fabulous wealth he has accumulated for himself and his family, could be removed from the presidency at any time. It's no secret that Biden, who's been eager to lick the boots of his masters, has some ugly political baggage that could be used to remove him from office should he fail to satisfy the will of his masters, or become so befuddled that he's physically unfit to continue holding his illegitimate office. The establishment could then install Vice President Kamala Harris as the 47th president. She's an ardent Marxist-Leninist and Maoist supporter who can be relied upon to continue with the radical transformation of America the leftists and globalists are demanding. Thinking about all this, it might behoove us to consider a little history here. Let's hear some audio segments from a three-part video series called Apocalypse Stalin, presenting the history of the Soviet dictator's rise to power and afterward. This is from the first part of the series, and the particular segments we're going to play are discussing the famed 1917 October Revolution. It was actually on November 7th on the Western calendar, in which the communist Bolsheviks seized power from the Kerensky interim government in Russia after Tsar Nicholas II abdicated. It discusses the statements and actions of the first Bolshevik leader, Vladimir Lenin. This is the communist hero whose face is widely shown in giant images along with Karl Marx and Mao Zedong at gatherings of the communist Chinese government. Lenin is worshipped by these people, along with communists around the world, as an icon and great leader of the communist movement. As you will hear, Lenin had the harshest words for his political opponents and called for the harshest of treatment of them, namely their mass murder and imprisonment. And thus began what became known as the Red Terror that lasted decades and was carried to even more terrible extremes by Lenin's protege, Joseph Stalin. Play soundbite one, please.
Petrograd, November 1917. After the Bolshevik coup d'etat, life returns to normal. There are no more clashes between militia in the streets. Writer Maxim Gorky wonders, what is going to happen now? I fear that much blood will be shed, much more than ever before. Lenin is seen in public with his mistress, a French militant named Inès Armand, and his wife, Nadezhda Krupskaya, a Bolshevik from the early days. He is pressured on two issues, peace with Germany and an upcoming political threat. Months ago, the provisional government had organized elections. Lenin decides to maintain the elections to legitimize his power. The first free elections in Russian history take place on November 25th, 1917. Only 3 weeks after their coup d'etat, the elections are a crushing defeat for the Bolsheviks. They end up with 168 deputies against almost 400 for the Socialist Revolutionaries, who are more moderate and democratic. Lenin immediately dissolves the assembly. He establishes his dictatorship, which he christens Dictatorship of the Proletariat. He promises a society without classes. He suspends all liberties and rights, forbids the existence of political parties, and eliminates freedom of the press and the right to strike. Lenin designates all his opponents, left and right, as enemies of the people or counter-revolutionaries. To neutralize these enemies, he creates a new secret political police and names it the Cheka, using the Russian initials for Commission for Combating Counter-Revolution. Lenin declares, "We will launch ruthless mass terror. How can one make a revolution without firing squads?" The Cheka secret police is run by the Pole Felix Dzerzhinsky, a man physically diminished by the Tsar's prisons who has spent his life engaged in revolutionary activities. Dzerzhinsky has the persistence of an inquisitor. He states, "We have no use for justice. We are at war on the cruelest of fronts." The Chekists, recruited among the Bolshevist radicals and the worst psychopathic criminals, are filmed here after looting an apartment in what they refer to as the bourgeoisie's contribution. In 6 weeks, the Cheka, the secret police, carries out 50,000 assassinations. No law, no justice. The public prosecutor asserts, "We must go beyond executing the guilty. The execution of innocents will impress the masses far more." March 3rd, 1918. The Russian and German soldiers emerge from the trenches and fraternize. The word on everyone's lips is international revolution. The banners call out, "Workers of the world, unite." Lenin and the Bolsheviks have just signed the peace treaty of Brest-Litovsk, a disaster for Russia, who loses a significant portion of land rich in wheat and steel. Petrograd is deemed too close to the German border. The Bolsheviks choose to return to the former capital, Moscow. Moscow, March 1918. Lenin poses in front of the famous Kremlin cannon. The Kremlin, the citadel that houses the tombs of the 47 Tsars. And today, the Tsar is Lenin, a Marxist. Lenin, the Russian dictator. His regime is supported by three pillars: the Bolshevik Party, the political police, and the Red Guards, who will evolve into the Red Army. But Lenin is in a precarious position. He is surrounded by forces hostile to Bolshevism. Throughout Russia, armies of White Guards are forming, often constituted of former Tsarist soldiers. These men are prepared to fight ferociously against the Reds, who are undisciplined workers or farmers, often poorly armed and equipped. So Lenin appoints Trotsky, People's Commissar of Army and Navy Affairs, a military man at heart. Trotsky had brilliantly organized the Bolshevik coup of November 1917. All his energy will be required. Civil war is about to begin. It will last 4 years and claim 10 million lives. Both sides are equally barbaric. They take no prisoners. In Russia, death has become an everyday companion. Vasily Petrovich Nikolaev, drafted into the Red Army at the age of 15, recalls, "Our sign of recognition was the red star on our caps. Our comrades lay dead in the fields, their stars cut out of their caps. There were also white officers ripped apart by our bayonets. Their stripes were coming out of their bellies. We spared no one." Lenin and a handful of men had thrown an entire continent into chaos. So other governments hostile to the Bolsheviks begin to form. The Bolshevik government decree of August 30th, 1918 officializes the Red Terror. It stipulates the class enemies must be isolated in concentration camps. All people are to be executed by firing squad who are connected with the White Guard organizations, conspiracies, and mutinies. Like the horsemen of the apocalypse, the Bolsheviks wreak death and destruction in order to stay in power. They pursue this course of action for the next 20 years until the Germans show up at the gates of Moscow.
The documentary goes on to detail Stalin's ruthless rise to power after Lenin became disabled and finally died from a series of strokes. As terrible and horrifying as Stalin was, it's made clear he was supported in his rise by both Lenin and Leon Trotsky, the other two great founding fathers of Soviet and international communism. In his ultimate takeover of power in the Soviet Union, Stalin would eventually order the execution of 12 of the original 15 Bolshevik government ministers of Lenin's 1917 government that seized power. Stalin had Trotsky exiled, then murdered by one of Stalin's spies in Mexico in 1940, thus completing the elimination by murder of all of Stalin's rivals for power. These communists couldn't win an election, so they seized power and instituted the Red Terror to hold on to it. Is this a lesson for our own times here in America? You decide. But I believe deep state apparatchiks like Barr and Wray might want to consider what they are helping to create. Of course, I have no doubt they would tell you that what I'm saying here is nonsense. Again, you decide. But just to show I'm not alone in seeing the rise of communist totalitarianism here in our beloved country, let's listen to just a couple of other observers who are saying essentially the same thing. First, here's an interview by Fox's Tucker Carlson on his Tucker Carlson Tonight television show, February 22nd, with Dr. Naomi Wolf, a left-leaning author and commentator who was an advisor to former President Clinton in his reelection campaign. She warns that Biden and the Democrats are turning America into a, quote, totalitarian state before our eyes, end quote. Play soundbite two, please.
One person who apparently is not afraid to speak up is Naomi Wolf, who is undoubtedly losing friends by appearing on the show tonight. She's the author of The End of America, Letter of Warning to a Young Patriot, and the CEO of Daily Clout. She joins us tonight. Naomi Wolf, I appreciate your coming on. I never thought I would be talking to you except in a debate format. I'm sure we disagree on an awful lot. But on this, I was struck by the bravery it must have taken you to write it. I'm sure you lost friends over it and for doing this. Tell us why you're doing this and why you wrote that.
Well, it's not just first of all, thank you, Tucker. I'm really happy to be talking to you. It's not just that one tweet. I've been writing pretty much every day for months and months about what I see as the terrible crisis that we're in, that we have to recognize. Under the guise of a real medical pandemic, we're really moving into a coup situation, a police state situation. And that's not a partisan thing. That, you know, as you say, that transcends everything you and I might agree or disagree on.
Right.
That should bring together left and right to protect our Constitution. We're absolutely moving into what I call step 10. I wrote a book in which I pointed out there were 10 steps that would-be tyrants always take when they want to close down a democracy, whether they're on the left or the right. They always do the same 10 things. And now we're at something I never thought I'd see in my lifetime. You described it really, really well. It is step 10, and that's the suspension of the rule of law. That's when you start to be a police state, and we're here. There's no way around it.
I'm so embarrassed, and it's another example, there are a million of them, of why partisanship is stupid, and it makes you stupid. And I guess I just assumed that we wouldn't agree on stuff, so I didn't read your tweets, and I obviously should have been, and I missed a lot. And so, again, it's nice to remember
okay. You
should treat people as individuals rather than as stand-ins for whole political parties. You have been predicting this for a long time, you just said. Why don't you think others aren't seeing this?
Well, unfortunately, a lot of people are seeing it, but we're not unified. And as you pointed out, we're a very divided country for a lot of cynical reasons. I'm in touch with many patriots from all backgrounds and all walks of life who are horrified. I interviewed, for instance, Moms for Liberty, a group of conservative moms in Florida who are mobilizing to try to get schools open. They're so worried about what's happening to their kids. And I talked to a mom, Jen Say, a famous gymnast and activist in San Francisco on the left, who's also a mom, who's horrified. I've interviewed doctors. I've interviewed, you know, ordinary people, restaurant owners from all walks of life who are absolutely unable to even articulate their fear and horror, recognizing that the state has now crushed businesses, kept us from gathering in free assembly to worship, as the First Amendment provides, is invading our bodies, as you mentioned, which is a violation of the Fourth Amendment, is restricting movement, fining us here in New York State. I could be fined $15,000 a day if I gather people, you know, more than 10 or 25 people, depending on where in New York State I live, which is a complete violation of the First Amendment. I mean, the violations go on and on and on. I've talked to restaurant owners who are looking at a sector in which tens of thousands of small businesses have been crushed. And why were they crushed? Not because a pandemic forced them to. There is no real science underlying a lot of these closures. It's because autocratic tyrants at the state and now the national level are creating a kind of merger of corporate power and government power, which is really characteristic of Italian fascism in the 20s. And they're using that to engage in kind of emergency orders that simply strip us of our rights, rights to property, rights to assembly, rights to worship, and all of the rights that our Constitution guarantees. So people are definitely horrified and noticing. I think people are shocked and divided, as I mentioned before. And the other thing that happened is you said this has all been very sudden. And when you look back, you know, March of 2020, a lot of things started to move that kind of locked into place a set of policies that are kind of 360-degree full-on totalitarian policies. So I think a lot of us are kind of in culture shock. Luckily or unluckily, I've been studying closing democracies for 12 years. So I recognized early on, you know, once I realized New York State had emergency powers, I know from history that no one gives up emergency powers willingly.
Right.
They always drag it on and drag it on. And so every month I'm getting in my email an announcement that Governor Cuomo is extending emergency measures. Only from studying history do I know how predictable it is when you start to have elected officials say we are not going to follow the Constitution because there's a pandemic. And I just want to say lastly, and then I promise I'll stop, nowhere in the Constitution does it say all this can be suspended if there's a bad disease. We have lived through typhus, cholera, smallpox, HIV, tuberculosis, polio, the Spanish flu. You know, we've lived through an attack on our soil. Never have there been months and months and months of emergency powers when we weren't actually fighting a war. So
that's right.
This is completely unprecedented. Lockdowns have never been done before in free societies. And really, we're turning into a version of a totalitarian state sort of before everyone's eyes. And I really hope, you know, we wake up quickly, because history also shows that it's a small window in which people can fight back before it's too dangerous to fight back.
As Wolf points out, the Biden administration and Democratic Party, who are exhibiting characteristics of loyal CCP supporters, are using the COVID-19 pandemic to impose unconstitutional and totalitarian restraints and restrictions on Americans. I say they're also using an old trick of the Maoist by using their longstanding mythology of the, quote, white supremacists, unquote, to sow racial hate and division in the nation, smear Trump supporters as being white supremacists, and institute a crackdown on them by stigmatizing and vilifying them in the eyes of the public. Thus, you have deep state leaders like Hillary Clinton calling Trump supporters deplorables, quote, unquote, and suggesting they need to be locked up in camps. We now know it was Hillary Clinton who made an enormous fortune for herself selling influence, or the promise of influence, in government, while at the same time advocating communistic policies, was the one who concocted the Russia collusion hoax, claiming that Donald Trump colluded with Russia to steal the 2016 election. Although this was totally false, with no proof whatsoever, the mainstream media and Barr and Ray's Justice Department stood by doing nothing as tens of millions of dollars was spent investigating Trump over the hoax for years, while they sat on and said nothing about the Hunter Biden laptop, even while President Trump was being impeached. This laptop computer, abandoned at a repair shop by Joe Biden's son, contains a huge amount of politically damaging and some say criminal information that we can now expect will be buried by the deep state unless they decide it's time to dump Beijing Biden. As I said, these people may want to consider that they are helping create a government monster that could well consume them all in the end. Do they really want to do away with the Constitution and our Republican form of democracy? Now let's hear some brief excerpts from a video by journalist David Zhang during the third part of his six-part video series on the rise of communism in America and the West, which aired last Friday on Zhang's Beyond the Noise podcast series. This can still be viewed on YouTube, I believe, but also elsewhere on the internet, including on Rumble.com, where he has his series come out. This part of the series deals with communist methods of infiltration of politics and social movements. Zhang has been at democracy protests in Hong Kong and was present during the Trump rally and later the riot, although he wasn't part of that, at the Capitol building in Washington on January 6. In my opinion, he's an outstanding journalist who often reports and comments on the CCP and its influence on the USA. I highly recommend the full episode and the entire video series. You seeing that if you can get a chance to do it. Please play soundbite 3.
Welcome to the third episode of this special series. I'm David Zhang. This is the third part of a six-episode series investigating and exploring with you together the rise of communism in the United States and in the Western world. In this episode, we look at the divided country and trace it to the secret movement of infiltration in politics by the communist agents and ideologies, all the while utilizing progressive movements and racial tension as the tool for a red revolution. Communism in the USA did not end with the fall of the Soviet Union. It in fact gained a much larger second coming and a much more dangerous uprising in the US and around the world. Before and after the fall of the communist regimes in the Eastern Europe, subversion has spread Marxist ideas throughout the free world, and left-wing movements have taken hold in many democratically elected governments. This slow yet consistent generational change of politics and political identity is the way communism has gained foothold in the US. Today's progressive movements have taken the shells of the original feminist and racial movements, and they've taken it with another motive in mind. And this motive is to establish the communist class struggle, and is the prerequisite to subverting a free society. In a free democratic society, people are held to mutual respect for each other. Though opinions may differ, there is the respect that at each of their own thoughts and values. But we respect each other, so we keep our disagreements. But the communists require hatred to start their revolution. They need a group of people to be hated. And once this group is hated for, say, anything they've done, this group is allowed to be persecuted. And this is all done under the tags of equality, racial justice, or revolution, whatever the term is. And all it takes is a single misstep to trigger a struggle. The seeds of hatred have been planted in the hearts of the masses. And this is precisely the sinister aim of communism. Lenin is widely quoted as saying, "We can and must write in a language which sows among the masses hate, revulsion, scorn, and the like toward those who disagree with us." In the summer of 2020, the killing of George Floyd sparked months of protest and it turned violent. An original idea of protecting racial justice turned into a full-on revolution.
And as you can see, that full-on revolution continues today with the Biden administration's reversal of Trump's pro-America economic and political policies and the Democratic Party's rush to pass legislation effectively doing away with free and fair elections in this country. I'm referring to H.R. 1 and S.1 bills in the House and Senate, respectively. Open the borders, flooding the country with tens of millions of illegal aliens, many of them previously deported criminals and many sick with COVID-19. engage in yet more wild and reckless spending, ostensibly to deal with a pandemic, but most of which under current legislation is unrelated to that, and includes such things as a $100 million subway project, $100 million spent toward a subway project in House Speaker Nancy Pelosi's district, and promotion of numerous other aspects of left-wing ideology, such as abortion on demand up to the moment of birth, ending use of fossil fuels as part of the climate change hysteria, and so on. Now let's listen to some excerpts from President Trump's first public speech since leaving office, which he presented at the conservative CPAC convention in Florida last weekend. Play soundbite 4, please.
Well, thank you very much, and hello, CPAC. Do you miss me yet? Do you miss me? A lot of things going on. To so many wonderful friends, conservatives, and fellow citizens in this room and all across our country, I stand before you today to declare that the incredible journey we begun together, we went through a journey like nobody else. There's never been a journey like it. There's never been a journey so successful. We began it together 4 years ago, and it is far from being over. We've just started. Movement of proud, hard, and you know what this is? The hardest working people, hardworking American patriots, is just getting started. And in the end, we will win. We will win. We've been doing a lot of winning. As we gather this week, we're in the middle of a historic struggle for America's future, America's culture, and America's institutions, borders, and most cherished principles. Our security, our prosperity, and our very identity as Americans is at stake, like perhaps at no other time. So no matter how much the Washington establishment and the powerful special interests may want to silence us, let there be no doubt, we will be victorious and America will be stronger and greater than ever before. To each and every one of you here at CPAC, I am more grateful to you than you will ever know. We are gathered this afternoon to talk about the future of our movement, the future of our party, and the future of our beloved country. For the next 4 years, the brave Republicans in this room will be at the heart of the effort to oppose the radical Democrats, the fake news media, and their toxic cancel culture, something new to our ears, cancel culture. And I want you to know that I'm going to continue to fight right by your side. We will do what we've done right from the beginning, which is to win. We're not starting new parties. You know, they kept saying, he's going to start a brand new party. We have the Republican Party. It's going to unite and be stronger than ever before. I am not starting a new party. That was fake news. Fake news, no. Wouldn't that be brilliant? Let's start a new party and let's divide our vote so that you can never win. No, we're not interested in that. No, we have tremendous, Mr. McLaughlin just gave me numbers that nobody's ever heard of before. More popular than anybody. That's all of us. It's all of us. Those are great numbers, and I want to thank you very much. Those are incredible numbers. I came here, and he was giving me 95%, 97%, 92%. We will be united and strong like never before. We will save and strengthen America, and we will fight the onslaught of radicalism, socialism, and indeed, it all leads to communism once and for all. That's what it leads to. You'll be hearing more and more about that as we go along, but that's what it leads to. You know that. We all knew that the Biden administration was going to be bad, but none of us even imagined just how bad they would be and how far left they would go. He never talked about this, but the Biden administration has put the vile coyotes back in business, and it has done so in a very, very big way. Under the new administration, catch and release has been restored. Can you imagine? We work so hard. Catch, you know what that is. You catch them. You take their name. They may be killers. They may be rapists. They may be drug smugglers. You take their name and you release them into our country. We did the opposite. We not only didn't release them, we had them brought back to their country. Illegal immigrants are now being apprehended and released along the entire southern border, just the opposite of what it was 2 months ago. They weren't coming because they couldn't get in. Once they think they can get in, they're coming, and they are coming at levels that you haven't even seen yet. By the hundreds of thousands, by the millions, they'll be coming. This alone should be reason enough for Democrats to suffer withering losses in the midterms and to lose the White House decisively 4 years from now. Who knows? I may even decide to beat them for a third time, okay? Beat them for a third time. We embrace free thought, we stand up to political correctness, and we reject left-wing lunacy, and in particular, we reject cancel culture. We know that the rule of law is the ultimate safeguard. And we affirm that the Constitution means exactly what it says, as written, as written. They want to change it. They want to change it. They want to get rid of it, frankly. We believe in law and order, and we believe that the men and women of law enforcement are heroes who truly deserve our absolute support. We don't defund the police. We are not defunding the police. Republicans should be the party of honest elections that can give everyone confidence in the future of our country. Without honest elections, who has confidence? Who has confidence? This issue is being studied and examined, but the reality is you cannot have a situation where ballots are indiscriminately pouring in from all over the country. Tens of millions of ballots. Where are they coming from? They're coming all over the place. Where illegal aliens and dead people are voting and many other horrible things are happening that are too voluminous to even mention. But people know. I mean, it's being studied, and the level of dishonesty is not to be believed. We have a very sick and corrupt electoral process that must be fixed immediately. This election was rigged, and the Supreme Court and other courts didn't want to do anything about it. If you just take that one element where they didn't go through legislatures, it's illegal. You can't do it. It's in the Constitution. They didn't have the courage, the Supreme Court. They didn't have the courage to act, but instead used process and lack of standing. I was told the President of the United States has no standing. It's my election. It's your election. We have no standing. We had almost 20, if you think of it, we had almost 20 states go into the Supreme Court so that we didn't have a standing problem. They rejected it. They rejected it. They should be ashamed of themselves for what they've done to our country. They didn't have the guts or the courage to make the right decision. They didn't want to talk about it. In the history of our country, and it has taken place for years in Pennsylvania and Detroit and various other places, but there's tremendous, never like this, because they use COVID as a way of cheating. That's what happened, and everybody knows it. Hundreds of thousands and millions of ballots. They used it as a way of getting what they've wanted for many years, and the Republicans have to do something about it. They better do something about it. Our election process is worse than that in many cases of a third world country. You know that. You saw what was going on. Even if you consider nothing else, it is undeniable that election rules were illegally changed at the last minute in almost every swing state, with the procedures rewritten by local politicians, you're not allowed to do that, and local judges. They want more time, they want this, they want that, all done by local politicians or local judges, as opposed to state legislatures as required by the Constitution of the United States. And these are numbers that are massive. These aren't little numbers. These are numbers that in each state is a transformative number. It changes the outcome of the election. And it's not close. Regardless of your political views, this should concern you as a constitutional matter. And the Supreme Court, again, didn't have the guts or the courage to do anything about it. And neither did other judges. And Democrats even admitted in Time magazine, which is, I would say, on the liberal side, that they couldn't, they just couldn't hold it in. They had to brag about it. Because what they did, they had to brag about it. They couldn't do it. You got to read the story. It's a disaster. It's a disaster for our country that we can allow something so corrupt to happen. Read that article. I really encourage you. You read that article. Yet all of the election integrity measures in the world will mean nothing if we don't have free speech. And that's where we're at now. If Republicans can be censored for speaking the truth and calling out corruption, we will not have democracy and we will have only left-wing tyranny. And we can do this. We can do this. We're smarter than they are. We're tougher than they are. For some reason, we just don't. We don't get it done. We let them attack our businesses, and we don't attack their businesses. I believe your numbers are bigger than their numbers, but you're nicer than they are. You're not as vicious as they are. In the past, we would debate. I would have it. I'd debate. You've seen me for many years. They throw something. I debate. They debate. Who knows who wins? You know, people go. They vote. They see what happens. But they would have an idea. They would disagree. The public would hear it. The debate and discourse would take place, and then somebody would make a decision. You would win, you would lose. The public would make up its mind, but now there is no debate because they refuse to allow our side to even speak or be heard. They don't want debate because we have easy victories in a debate, very easy victories. It's called common sense. It's called other things, but it's called common sense, so they don't want a debate. The time has come to break up big tech monopolies and restore fair competition. And that's why I'm announcing that I will be actively working to elect strong, tough, and smart Republican leaders. We will persist and we will prevail. We're tougher than they are. We're stronger than they are. Together in the coming years, we will carry forward the torch of American liberty. We will lead the conservative movement and the Republican Party back to a totally conclusive victory. And we've had tremendous victories. Don't ever forget it. With your help, we will take back the House. We will win the Senate. And then a Republican president will make a triumphant return to the White House. And I wonder who that will be.
I'd sure like to think Trump is correct that we will be victorious, and it's not just Trump being optimistic, as he often is. If we don't get control of our elections, we are definitely not going to be victorious. There are a lot of reports now in the alternative media about ballot shredding, mysterious fires, and all kinds of foot dragging to prevent these ongoing pressures for investigating the election evidence in the swing states. I say Trump is definitely correct about one thing. The election was rigged. Now, one of the people who has been doing this investigating, who wants to be turned loose to look at the actual ballots themselves and other things that are related to that, who's an expert on this, is Joe Von Pulitzer. And he recently came out and stated that, you know, after 6 months in a lot of these jurisdictions, these ballots can be – that were in the election – serve as backups to the machine voting, they can be destroyed. And we've already hearing, as I said, all these reports about ballots being shredded, ballots being burned. They've more time that goes on before these thorough investigations are done, not sham investigations, but the ones that we need to have done, the more likely that it's going to be that evidence will be disappearing, more evidence will be disappearing, and be more and more difficult to see what really happened in the elections. As the late great political commentator, radio host Rush Limbaugh observed shortly before his death, we are finding that today everything is rigged. And although we freedom-loving conservatives believe in the rule of law, our opponents decidedly do not. In fact, they are working diligently to effectively do away with the law, as Trump and myself and others are saying, except as it can be applied toward aiding their own ends, like all good totalitarians. So what can we do to resist this communist globalist takeover? By globalists, I'm talking about, as I said, people like George Soros, who's pressing for no borders anywhere in the world, world government, and a lot of the oligarchs, these business individuals and corporations, which have all kinds of sweetheart deals in Red China, and who are fearful that these trillions of dollars worth of money tied up with these deals is at risk with a Trump presidency. But what can we do to resist their takeover? Let's go over a few things. And I want to emphasize here that I am not calling for any type of violence, but there are effective ways of resisting this anti-freedom onslaught. Here are a few of my ideas. Vote with your money and your feet. Don't patronize our enemies. Boycott outfits like Google and Google-owned YouTube, other big tech giants like Amazon, Twitter, and Facebook, if you can. I understand people have business tied up with here these things. A lot of social activity on them, but you can start winding down all the stuff. You can start moving away from it. Try alternatives on Twitter, such as Gab.com, Messenger, Parler, which has recently come back online after being deplatformed by Amazon. I am not on Twitter or Facebook, and I am winding down, if not eliminating, my use of Amazon. You can try eBay as an alternative. A lot of good stuff on eBay to buy. And also Amazon-owned businesses like Whole Foods. I shop there. I'm trying to cut back and eliminate it, but I still have to shop occasionally there, but I'm really not spending the money that I was there. I try not to use Google in doing internet searches. Sometimes I'm directed them automatically, but I am avoiding YouTube whenever possible. A good alternative I found at present is Rumble.com for videos, an alternative to YouTube, and DuckDuckGo, that's DuckDuckGo, the DuckDuckGo search engine instead of Google. And Brave Browser is a good alternative to Google Chrome, if you ask me. Another thing you want to do is make your voice heard. Contact your elected representatives about pending legislation, and this is important now with this H.R. 1 and S1, the similar or not identical bills to basically federalize all the elections using the same things that were done in the 2020 elections, such as doing with voter ID and so forth. If you don't make an effort in this regard, you might as well not exist for these people, that is your elected representatives. And don't give up on voting. Yes, we do have a lot of rigged elections, but not all. We've got to get working to vigorously oppose and undo the ridiculous voting practices that encouraged the massive fraud that I'm convinced occurred last year, such as elimination of voter ID, mass mailings of the fraud-ridden mail-in ballots, using the pandemic as an excuse. Pay attention to what's going on in your voting area and get involved with pressing legislators in saving our elections, along with other important elements of our freedom. This also applies to the courts. It's obvious to me that many jurists today are either left-wing ideologues or are compromised with money, extortion, threats of violence, etc. Let's pay a lot more attention to our judges, how they get into office, what they do to stay there, and what can be done to remove the worst of them who are corrupt. If the left controls our elections and our judiciary, which is what I'm very afraid of, the country's gone. Even Beijing Biden says, quote, buy American, unquote, though I'm sure it's merely propaganda on his part. But he is right in principle. I'm not patronizing communist China, which is seeking to wipe America as we have known it off the map. And I want to stress here that I'm not expressing anger at Chinese people. Remember that Remember that many ethnic Chinese in this country are strongly anti-communist and are our allies. I'm expressing opposition to the CCP and its policies which are harmful to America. Toward that end, I'm refraining from buying anything made in communist China, whenever and wherever possible. Now, I know sometimes maybe it's the only thing you can get. You don't have enough money for something better or more or American-made. We want to be reasonable here, but it is important right now, very important. And what I'm trying to do, I have a lot of Chinese communist-made products I bought without thinking about it over the years, but not anymore. Anytime I can find an alternative today, I'm doing it, and I'm going to do my best not to buy anything made in communist China if I can help it. And also buy American, but not anti-American American. If Coca-Cola, for example, is telling its employees to be less white, engaging in the divisive racial rhetoric of the left, then I don't want to support them by buying anything they produce that I am aware of. This is to say that we don't have white racism in this country, which I condemn as always, but I don't want to be indoctrinated by corrupt and false leftist ideology. Likewise, we need to oppose this type of indoctrination of our children by corrupt leftist-dominated public education systems. It's time to begin looking at what they are teaching your children in school. Another thing I'd like to see is the creation
of – Come on, that's fine. We'd love to have Mom and
Joe. Black Lives Matter movement with $250 million, which he did in the last year. And BLM is calling for an end to capitalism and private property. Why should Soros have a personal fortune of more than $8 billion? Likewise, Bill and Hillary Clinton, Robert De Niro, Madonna, Gloria Steinem, Joe Biden and his family, the NBA and NFL, etc. Nike gave, was it $40 million to BLM? If that's true, why not nationalize Nike? Since we're promoting totalitarianism, why not pass a law that anyone supporting communism must turn over their wealth? Put it all into a giant pool and appoint a Soviet, a committee, to oversee its redistribution to the oppressed. All these stupid people and institutions believe they are going to hold on to their wealth and the rest of us are going to give it up. Really? There are other things you can do, we can all do, to resist and oppose this totalitarian thinking and takeover of our country. So let's give it all some thought and debate. One thing that struck me during last year's election fiasco was that despite their domination of mainstream media, social media, nonprofits, Hollywood, and much of our governmental institutions, the left still failed to win the election legitimately. So they had to steal it. And yes, I firmly believe the election was stolen, despite the massive attempts to cover it all up and prevent any further discussion of it. A sure way you can tell that there was fraud is that the now almost desperate efforts by the powers that be to prevent any further mention of it and to demonize those who do mention it. The left sure didn't hesitate to continuously rage on and on for all the years of Trump's presidency about the totally false contention that Trump supposedly stole the 2016 election. But that's the type of outrageous hypocrisy typical of the left. They do what they want, you do what they say. Throughout all this, though, I've been inspired by the numbers of true American patriots of all different ethnic, socioeconomic, and cultural backgrounds who've come together to fight against this tyranny and save our republic. That's a lot of people and a lot of power if we can use it effectively. Let's not give up on America. Not yet. Well, that's it for our show this week. Look for us again 2 weeks from now in this same time slot. Till next time, good night and Godspeed.